Welcome to this episode of the Strong Kind Podcast. This episode is with Ben Cormack. If you've ever struggled with pain or injury and you've wanted to understand what you're going through better, or if you're a musculoskeletal practitioner like a physical therapist or a chiropractor, this episode's for you. Ben is a MSK sports practitioner, educator out of the UK. He has been in practice for a long time, and he is a wealth of knowledge on pain, injury, and what I would call no BS approaches to helping humans. We talked a lot about helping humans, practicing in ways that are optimistic and ultimately don't make people afraid of their body and continuing to live. We also talked a lot about learning and education and the evolution of ourselves and Ben's evolution as a practitioner and an educator. It was a great conversation. I really appreciate Ben coming on. You can find him at Core Kinetic on Instagram. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and thanks so much for being here. So Ben, all right, I'll start. Sorry, Ben. So I've actually followed you for a long time. Like, I think I found you in physio school or when I was in physical therapy school. And you, along with some other people, are just like, we're like starting new. It's just not simple, right? Like, in a good way, like, because I was optimistic about the human body. And then I almost got like, oh shit, we're screwed, right? And then I started to get exposed to like you and Greg Lehman, and then, you know, like Louis Gifford. I think I said his name right. But like, Ben, just tell us how long you've been a physio. Tell me and the listeners here how long you've been a physio, and did you have that turning point, or did you have like existential struggles as a physio?
Yeah, so my background in the UK, I studied what's called sports therapy, which is kind of the MSK part of physio. So it's very, very similar, but just slightly different. So did I go through any kind of, have I put myself through the same kind of existential crisis I've put other people through?
Yeah.
And the answer to that would be yes, but mine were very much self-inflicted. So I think that one of the things that I've always done is ask myself why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I want to know the nuts and the bolts and all the stuff behind the stuff. And so I think that when you start to peer behind the curtain, you do start to realize many of the things that you once thought are probably not quite as solid as people make them out to be. So I think for myself, I went to uni way back, originally in the 90s, actually, was the first time that I went. And, then we were talking a lot about core stability. And then after that, it was very much about kind of a corrective exercise type approach and, getting, long things strong and short things longer and all of this type of rubbish. And then kind of going into like biomechanics and that type of thing. And then kind of going into the world of motor control and then kind of into the world of pain science and the brain and then out the other side and the biopsychosocial model up to today where, I don't know if I have that much of a clue what's going on anymore. but I think it's because, what we and along that way, I've always kind of talked about and written, about these kind of things and about my thoughts. And this is what people have probably read along the way. But I think that it's important to have small existential crises. And if you're not having an existential crisis, at least every 7 years, then I think you're probably not looking and being critical about kind of what you're doing. So I like to liken myself to Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
In that I've had my eras, and my wife loves Taylor Swift. She's a Swiftie, even though she's well in her 40s. But, I think we all have different eras of the way that we do things and the way that we practice And I actually think that's quite important for our growth, and that we're doing the best thing that we can at the time with the information that we've got. And the only sin here is if you never change and never think your shit does not stink.
That's a really, man, the eras analogy. So I think one of the existential things that I've just chosen to do things a certain way because I like lifting and I like talking to people and I like not necessarily like the psychological aspects of stuff, but I think like those are the things that seem almost like consistent, you know, like through the era, through the time and through the cyclical nature of so much things. Like the things that seem pretty consistent to me are like, well, we got, and I don't even want to use the word stronger because you get it, but like not everybody gets it, where it's like, we just got to get stronger. And like, that's not necessarily true for pain, right? There's not a lot of strong people out there who are in a lot of pain, and it's mostly because like of a lack of understanding about the stress they're imposing, right? And that's the tricky part, right? But like where I and you post on this a lot, and it's like manual therapy, and even I think on your stories you're talking about like what's good for back pain, right? And most of the evidence is point it just points to like continuing to move and staying optimistic that your back pain can get better, right? But you had a few people be like, well, a manual therapy maybe helped me, and I'm like, and because I never was like, I want to do manual therapy. Like I just was in school and we were doing like the mobilizations, and I'm just like, what are we doing here? And I also felt like I was an idiot because other people were like, oh yeah, I feel that upslip. And I'm like, do you really? Like, and confirmation bias is a wild thing, right? Where I have accepted a little bit is if like your narrative is that, yeah, honestly, I don't know what this does, but I can talk to you. And if you think it feels good, that's good and cool. Like, then I'm gonna get you moving. I'm gonna, you know, provide other ways. Like, I have to kind of accept that and be okay with it. The problem is that's not most people's narrative around it, right? Like, and that's the tricky thing. It's like the stories we're telling.
Yeah, so if you were to ask me my approach to musculoskeletal rehab, I would say the principles that I use are pretty simple, in terms of getting people moving, trying to be optimistic, engaging with people, this stuff. Even the application, we could say, is fairly simple. Where it becomes complicated is where you bring in other people. Right? So I think we are trying to keep it as simple as possible from a lot of different perspectives. But where we have to acknowledge the complexity is when we get into that two-part medicine. So when I say two-part medicine, what I mean is kind of when you look at the biopsychosocial model, people like George Engel were talking about it's not just about the doctor, it's also about the patient. And where it gets complex is when you get into not our philosophies and our processes and our approaches, it's when they combine with the other person that the complexity comes in. So you could have the simplest shit in the entire world, your method, if you like, but there will always be a complexity because it's does that resonate with the other person? Do they see it as the right approach? Is it something that they're going to come along for the ride for? So, I totally think we should always be as simple as possible. But as Einstein said, no simpler. But the complexity comes in actually when it kind of is interacting what we do with what other people do. And I think that's the real challenge. And I think that's what you're kind of alluding to there.
Well, yeah, and I think you're 100% on it too. I mean, I've had people like tweak their back, like, and they start working with me, and it sucks, but like they're high stress people and they want to get active, and like the first, you know, they're actually jumping back into exercise and they tweak their back like week one or week two, right? And you're like, damn, okay. And like at first I was afraid of that. I'm like, this is actually a really good learning opportunity for both of us, right? But the tricky thing is like, and I'm not saying that you don't want to be collaborative, but like they go to a chiro, like they go to somebody, like they're like, should I go get it checked out or the XYZ? And I used to be like trying to like talk them away from that. And then I'm like, no, go and let's see what they say. And then let's talk about it. Right. And it actually like, it's scary. And you have to listen and like understand, like, cause if they go to one of the chiro who's like, you know, yeah, you did something, or they like think they need some, or even just their family, You know, like if you tweak your back and they interact with their family and it's like, well, you should probably go to the emergency room, right? Or XYZ. And like these are things where like, no, the evidence does not support like over medicalization of this, right? But it's tricky to tell somebody that, right? And so I think that's where I've grown a lot and tried to grow a lot is just like acknowledging that we just got to meet people where they're at, right? Have you ever read Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha, the book Siddhartha? Have you ever heard of that book?
I have not.
All right, it's like a philosophical, it's about wisdom though, and it's like wisdom cannot be taught. And I'm like, damn, like I've read that book 3 times. And finally, you know, at 36, it hit me way better than it did at 22 because it's like, yeah, wisdom cannot be taught. Lessons are can be maybe passed on a little bit, but like the person has to experience stuff. And that's the way I've hopefully, and I think that's what your content does a really good job of helping people have that existential crisis in a way that doesn't necessarily like be defeating and turn into nihilism, because that's where a lot of people kind of have gone, right? It's like this weird like nihilistic, oh, nothing matters. And it's like, well, a lot of stuff matters. But what's your maybe take on that, where it's like people kind of get into the void there?
Yeah, well, look, again, it comes back to being comfortable with kind of questioning, you know, what we do and who we are and these type of things. And I think the more comfortable we are with that, you know, the more able we are going to be to be able to do that. And, you know, I have this chat with my wife quite regularly about my son. My son's nearly 14. And sometimes you can tell kids all you want, but they will have to go out and learn those lessons for themselves. Right.
Yeah.
And actually, there's not a, you know, there is no substitute for that. It's the same way a week one clinician wants to be a 10-year clinician. They
Yeah.
want to shortcut that process. Right.
Yeah.
Of course, who would not want to?
Yeah.
And there are, you know, certainly things like mentorship and input can help you do that. But at some point, you just have to learn some of those lessons for yourself. That opens your eyes to, you know, what would that be like coming out of school, for example? So, you know, not everyone is going to get better with that exercise. Not everyone is going to get better in the time frame that you want. Not everything is going to go smoothly. But can we ask people to question themselves a little bit without completely destroying them? So is meeting other clinicians, the same as patients. As an educator, I look to meet people where they're at. And one of the things that I probably did 15 years ago is I wanted to show everyone how smart I was. So you go into the classroom, you bust all the myths, look at all of this evidence. And then I just realized that maybe that isn't always the best way. Maybe it's about, you know, being a bit more Socratic. Maybe it's about gently pushing the boundaries, asking people what they think, what their experiences are like. So I view education in the same way I do view working with patients, is that I'm not, you know, I don't want to create, you know, these moments that are eureka moments, because they also carry the risk of the other way around as well.
Yeah.
So why don't we just gently work with this person and their beliefs and their thoughts and, you know, and yeah, do it a little bit more like that. So, you know, trying to be existential, but without the crisis.
Yeah. Well, and I think the tricky thing about you've touched on a lot of good points there. The tricky thing about like I was actually a history major. I was a history and political science major before I went to physio school here. And it's like a lot of my classmates like they didn't want to discuss stuff. Like, and I'm nothing
Oh, I get
against
it.
them. They're just like, I just want to kind of know black and white, what do I do for this person? And I'm like, yeah. So, and I think that's one of the things that evolves over time is you just get better at, like, let's be honest. And I didn't know you were MS, so you're not technically a physio. I should have done my research, but it doesn't matter, in my
No.
opinion.
So yeah, so it's sports therapy is just slightly different. It's
Yeah.
but you know, you work with the same patients. It's not a real difference.
What I kind of learned in my first like physio job like in a clinic is like the environment of that clinic is what mattered. Like, you know, it was we had like good tune, or maybe it wasn't good tunes, but it was like 80s rock going on and off on a regular basis. And like you were kind of, you know, if the people working were in a good mood and like you were kind of in this mutual gym setting where like You know, somebody was maybe trying something hard or whatever. Other people saw that. And it was like, I think that was kind of like the microcosm of like, there's a lot of factors going on. And just being nice to that person who's maybe having a hard time is so positive. And that was one of those things. It's like, because, you know, I was getting pretty good results helping people with just like mostly like getting moving and like, you know, and talking, where I had another buddy who was like pretty manual oriented and like, you know, did I agree with what he was doing all the time? No, but his people got better too. And I'm like, okay, so what's going on here? And you know, that's the tricky part. You're like, what you want to be right, right? You want to know you've got the secret sauce.
Yeah, look, I think and this is what research helps us understand, doesn't it? And exactly why you have different groups within a research trial, you know, that we're giving different treatments to, or no treatments to, or placebo treatments to.
Yeah.
Because the point is, you're trying to understand, is this intervention the mechanism for that person getting better? Is there a causal factor here? And actually, that's one of the things. And I have this little saying, research is not here to make us happy. And a lot of times that throws up this idea that, you know, a lot of people probably do get better through factors that relate to them or their problem, you know, the natural history of the problem or the prognosis of the problem. Maybe they're bigger factors than what we do sometimes. And that can be difficult to you know, take sometimes, because you thought you were the master and you thought you had the answer. In my day, it was get the VMO firing or getting the TVA firing or whatever. But I think what we can do is avoid messing it up. Because I
Yeah.
actually think that when you use the word over-medicalization, over-treatment, I actually think one of the biggest things is not doing those points,
Yeah.
right? So
Yeah.
how do we not reduce the positive effects of what happens? How do we make sure this person has the optimal journey based on their biology? And you know, there are, you know, their optimism is a great example of that. People who don't believe they're going to get better don't get better. You know,
Yeah.
that's the basic, you know, the prog it's a prognostic factor. So therefore, I think sometimes it's, you know, are we supporting this person's biology on the optimal journey? If we're really lucky, we might speed that up a little bit. If we're not, we won't. But can we avoid actively reducing that? And, you know, there was a JAMA paper a couple of years ago that looked at what makes chronic pain transition to chronic pain. And it was over-medicalization, you know, so giving too much referral into different specialities. It was over-imaging. It was over-use of pharmacology. But then it was also some of the prognostic factors of the individual, like lifestyle, health, you know,
Yeah.
these type of things as well. So I think, you know, some people are primed to get better more than others. They have more favorable biology, you know, physiology or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's our job to not get in the way of that, I think. And I think one of the big problems out there in the kind of the physio world is sometimes we do get in the way of that, you know.
Yeah. One of my favorite actors, actually one of my football coaches, American football in high school. He was a cool guy. He was also kind of a jerk, but he would always just say, if you can't help us, don't hurt us. And meaning basically like minimize your, you know, like if you're not gonna make the play, like don't make a bad play, like don't do a bad play, right? Type
Yeah,
of thing.
don't
Which,
fuck it
yeah,
up.
right. And so, or you know, and like for where I take that, and you bring up a good point about believing that things are going to improve, right? And like that's one of the hard interfaces of like being, you know, I love psychology. I'm reading a freaking psychology book, right? Like right now, like Steve Magnus is somebody that I enjoy. I like reading psychology, but and like the intersection between psychology and physiology, right? But I'm also not a psychologist. And so like to some degree, what I'm just trying to do is just allow the person to like make their own decisions, right?
Yeah.
Like talk them through some of these things. But you mentioned kind of the self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't want to, maybe that's not the best way to put it, but it kind of becomes that, But there's all sorts of factors because it's not one thing, right? It's not like just because you don't believe you're going to get better. The reason that you don't believe you're not going to get better is probably because you have a bunch of shit going on that is affecting your belief in your ability to get better. And you haven't been exposed to things that make you see, like, oh, there's a light, right? So maybe talk through, I don't know if that was a good question, but like talk through some of the things that maybe you're telling and teaching other clinicians to not fuck it up, if that makes sense. You mentioned a bunch of them, but like maybe some more specific things that you see.
So look, when we talk about psychology, I think there is psychopathology and working with anxiety and depression, and there is just psychology as in sports coaching or sales or the psychology of interaction. So psychology, I think that psychologists deal with pathopsychology. But I think there is a basic psychology to human behavior. And that's where helping people make sense of their problem comes in, is understanding that you can have a negative effect on people's behavior through the words that you use. I always have a little joke in class. We talk about telling people they have unstable spines. And I say, would you drive an unstable car? Would you live in an unstable house? Would you marry an and
By the
I've
way,
been
that
married
one.
three times. No, I'm only joking. But the point is, I think when we think about and use psychology, it is about taking the time to not give answers that are simple and wrong. That we often want to give people, oh, it's your disc, it's your this, it's your that, because they're throwaway, easy answers, aren't they, that fit the narrative. And sometimes those phrases, those terms, those ways of talking have a negative psychological effect. That's what we describe as nocebo, right? So it's avoiding that nocebo. It's avoiding saying things that are, and again, another one of my teaching sayings is rule number one, don't say stupid shit. And all that means is, there are so many rationales and reasons out there for problems that are just not true. But our very me mechanically simplistic posture is the great example, isn't it? Your shoulders are rounded. It makes sense, but it's not true for a biological organism. So I think rather than just throw out these really simple answers for why you have back pain, why this hurts, why that hurts, is take a minute and think, could that also have a harm to it? And I think that's one of the key factors. Does what I have to say, does it carry benefit or does it carry harm? And I actually think there's the great Bendalo paper from 2013, isn't there, where they talk about the enduring impact of what clinicians say, and a lot of the things that we think are throwaway comments are not throwaway. They actually have an effect on people's beliefs and their behavior.
That's
So,
amazing.
and so I think that's the most easy way is, to avoid things that are going to have a negative psychological impact and just have basic psychology in terms of how would you coach a kid? How would you talk to someone in the pub? How would you, do you see, I've got a very humanistic philosophy when it comes to interaction and psychology. Keep it human. Treat people as you would like to be treated. But sometimes you may need more than that, and that's why we have various kind of CBT and these type of things. But I think sometimes we underestimate just how just making someone feel supported is a positive psychological interaction.
It's funny. So you touched on a lot of good things in there. One, so like my business, I don't know if you've gotten a flavor. I know you started following me after like my root cause post, which I
I
appreciate
like
that.
that. I thought that was very good.
I mean, like, because I just hate that. And I want to get into social media a little bit in a little bit here. But one of my, so I was a personal trainer before I went to physio school too. Like I became a coach, and then I got a normal job, and I'm like, and then COVID happened. And I had people that I luckily wanted to like just keep training with me and like coaching. And one of my buddies is actually, he's a psychiatrist. He's a palliative care physician actually, and he's like a client of mine. And we had a chat on Tuesday because he just got back from a trip. We were just talking about training and stuff. And he just mentioned the need for safety. And I'm like, isn't that what it really boils down to? Is just if we can make us if we feel safe to explore, Like, and he's like, dude, yeah, I mean, like, we just think about that all the time. Like, because what it was is he was actually interacting with, he was teaching some exchange physicians from China, and he was going through palliative care stuff, and they just kept going, yeah, that, like, and he's like, so one of my buddies who speaks Mandarin, after the fact, he's like, hey, they were just saying yes, because like, it's not okay, it's in their culture, like, saying that you don't understand is not necessarily something that they
Right.
do, right? You
Yeah,
just convey, okay. And he's like, so he's like, you almost have to explicitly say, like, you have to make it safe for them to say, if you don't understand, please, it's okay. But that's not something they're just gonna accept. I'm like, dang, that isn't that the thing? Like, we're just trying to figure out how to allow the person to feel a little bit safe and a little bit vulnerable to like do the thing they're scared of, or try the thing, you know, or just to ask the question, because we just get into assumptive mode, right? Like, and so the language we use, and let's go there. The posture stuff. Why is it still so prevalent with like all of the data we know, like that posture isn't necessarily causal for pain and XYZ, but it's like still the number one thing that, you know, I tell somebody I'm a physical therapist and I'm like, yeah, I should probably work on my posture, like without even me cueing anything, and so just go there.
Because it makes sense.
Yeah, it's
It
wild, isn't it?
makes basic mechanical sense. When your car is out of alignment, things go pop. When if we think about a machine, that's the way that machines work. They're in alignment, something breaks, or something gets out of alignment and it wears down, doesn't it? Or something in your car. So if your wheels aren't aligned, they wear in a funny way, don't they? And you have to have your tires changed or flipped around, and it wears on the inside, and then it, can have a problem. So I think so many things are about, does it make sense? And biology, lots of things don't make simple, intuitive sense. They are complex. They are, they rely on multiple interactions in multiple systems to. That might happen in di there's redundancy, things happen in different ways, and it's really, really bloody complex. And so therefore, if something is easy and simple, like your muscle isn't turning on, it doesn't do this, it's doing this, that's the reason. And someone just goes, oh, that makes sense to me, because if something in my car was doing this rather than this, there'd be a problem. So I think it comes back to biology is very, very complex, far too complex to understand. We haven't figured it out, and we've been trying to do this stuff for millions, for thousands of years since the Greeks, before that, since we were in caves, I expect. And that stuff just isn't as intuitive, it isn't as easy to understand, and it isn't as easy to say. So it fits the societal narrative, it fits people's levels of understanding, it makes intuitive sense. The problem is, it's just not true.
Well, like, and like, so let's be honest too. There is a shade of truth. Like, if you sit like this for hours, or you know, for a long period of time, you're probably gonna get some feedback from your body that this is not a position that you want to be in for very much longer, right?
What
And
your nociceptive system's for.
yeah, exactly, right? And that's so there's like, let's get into social media. Like, there's so many shades of truth, like, or like just a little bit of truth in a lot of these
Or
overarching
shades
ones.
of shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's like a little bit of, there's a golden nugget inside of a big pile of shit, right? And so,
It's
I mean,
steaming, brother.
yeah, like, when did you start, like interfacing? I don't know why I use that word, but like, when did you start posting on, like Instagram? When did you start to be like, okay, I'm gonna get on social media and start to just put out content?
Well, I mean, I was pre-Insta.
Yeah,
Look
you were probably doing
at this
stuff
face,
before.
bro. Look how old I look. This is a face of pre-Instagram.
Yeah, so like let's go there even. Like, when did you as a professional, like, I need to start posting content, and I need to start like expressing my beliefs, to help people, right?
This was probably about 15 years ago, and I started in the mysterious world of blogging. That's what
Yeah.
we did back then, right?
I'm doing
So
it now.
you may.
I don't know why the hell I started a blog, but I want to write more, and
It's
so I'm like, this is
brilliant.
gonna,
Blogging's brilliant. So there was Todd Hargrove writing a blog. There was Greg Lehman writing a blog. I was writing a blog. Adam Meekins was doing his blog. And what we were doing essentially was pouring out a stream of consciousness, I think. Greg has his subjects, Todd has his subjects, I have mine. And along that way, that was where we first started, I think. But those blogs took hours. They were referenced. They're still up on my site. Some have had hundreds of thousands of views, I think. And so many people, I can't remember who I was with recently. Ben from Barbell Medicine, if you know Ben. And Ben was saying to me, I started reading your blog like in 20 whenever. And I think that blogs then used to be a little bit like research papers. They were well referenced, they were well written. You just didn't have to go through the purgatory and shit of peer review. But for me, it was an evolution, I think, a little bit of doing the blogs, being on places like Twitter, where we used to interact, with more of a research community. And then slowly, I'm going to say something I hope people don't get offended by, but I actually think that we're going backwards. I think we really reached a bit of a zenith, if you like, of evidence-based interactions and discussions, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I feel with the rise of things like Instagram and the accessibility of some of those videos that people put up and, some of the more picture-based content, I actually think we are maybe losing the battle again, because there isn't a level of deeper learning.
I actually like my blog is not that. My blog is just me like 3 minutes of just stream of consciousness. Hey, stop being such a pansy and deal with your shit. But it's mostly just me talking to myself. But there is an out. So I think what you touched on there, and it is very true. Well, like I don't think the average person really realizes how much like Instagram, TikTok, like they're just hacking normal drives for like new stuff, right? Oh, that was cool, right? And it can be pros and cons. I mean, my goal very much my goal is honestly like education and marketing for myself, right? And I just again, my number one axiom is just like, yeah, don't post shit that's gonna scare people. Like I don't want to drive have a fear-driven business. I don't want to have a like those types of things, but like fear and negativity are like biases that are so that are we are naturally like evolved or that's what we look at, right? That's why the news is such a freaking problem to, and it's not that the news is bad, it's how our news has developed and become it's fear porn, quote unquote, right? And so like a page like yours, and I was literally just thinking about Brandolini's law like yesterday, which is like it takes an order of magnitude like higher
Bigger.
to refute bullshit than to put out bullshit, right? But like, yeah, it's I think we are we I think in a lot of regards we're going backwards because like it's how many you scroll Instagram and every third swipe is an advertisement, and it's usually an advertisement for a shitty product. Right, it's not like, hey, go to get take this course that's actually going to help you learn to manage these things and train appropriately or XYZ. It's like, hey, here's another massage gun, like or whatever. So but I do think you're 100% right. What have you seen from well what have you learned from putting out content for 15 years? Like
Great question.
has it helped you like has it changed anything? I talked to Greg on this podcast a while ago and I'd never talked to Greg and I was like blown away just how smart Greg is, but like also just like how he's gone through this arc of like he was like a spine specialist, right? And then he became a chiro and then he went through this thing and it's like think about I always just think about like how much humility, maybe that's not the best word for it, but like humility to be like, oh shit, I don't know. Like, oh, I'm a chiro now. Oh, this doesn't seem like the right thing to do. Or, I'm gonna go get another like form of education to update my beliefs, right? And you kind of talked about the 7 year arc of updating your beliefs. What has maybe changed for you, or what has posting content in various forms taught you?
Yeah, well, look, I think first of all, when in the back in the blogging days, you had to write something that was pretty good. That's what it taught me, that you had to be well researched with what you wrote, and because otherwise you got ripped to shreds. People, there was a lot more people interacting, I think, in this kind of world. But now I think, it's about, for me, the problem is trying to grab attention with subjects that are important but not always potentially attention grabbing, right? So I think there are a lot of really important subjects. And people love to talk about things like posture. They love to talk about treatments. They generally like, strong opinions about whether something's right or whether it's wrong, or someone is right or someone is wrong. And I think sometimes that need for that gets in the way of good information. That there needs to, I think what's happened more recently is it needs to be more headline grabbing, or it needs to be more sensationalist. Good information is not good enough now. You have to think about how that's presented, and it has to be something that really draw. I think social media is about emotion. Do I like it or do I dislike it? And both of those actions make me do something.
You just
But
pretty much described like the US political ecosystem in a nutshell right there, my friend.
it's fairly binary, isn't it? The US political. I mean, literally, it's blue and red. It's quite binary, isn't
We don't have
it?
a whole lot of good options over here. At least like
No.
they get if there are good options, they get pushed into the groups
Well,
we don't know. So
but it's not even good options. You don't have many options
yeah,
at all.
100%, right?
Yeah. And so I think that, yes, we have become far, social media has become far more sensational, and it's become less, we've always discussed social media is not nuanced, but it's certainly become a little bit more like US politics. There you go.
I
That's
mean, yeah, it's well, it's
vibe, right?
yeah, and you know, it's funny too because the people who like, you know, I like and follow your content, you know, but it also like aligns with my bias. Like I'm part of your tribe, quote unquote, a little bit, right? And you know, like I'm like because I was just like scrolling on your page a little bit just to continuously like, but like. Yeah, I just it fits the direction that I want to go in, right? And it's easier, and that, like that's good because I think it's good content and I think it's meaningful. But like, if I was somebody who, you know, was not just in line with your how you maybe approach things, you know, I was, I don't even want to bring up anybody else's name, but like I was just really more like, oh yeah, the you know the cause of back pain is, you know, is like malalignment and instability or nerve conduction oriented things, I would look at your content and be like, oh, this isn't for me at all. Like, and
Of
or
course,
I'm gonna
yeah.
put it away, right? So it's like people just does this double tap if it aligns with what I want to think today, right?
And that goes back to our point of, being open to challenging who you are and what you do. And so this, I always say, you are either evidence-based or you are not evidence-based. There's no middle ground. So you either follow what the evidence says or you don't, right? You can't pick and choose. And I think that as things change, we need to change along with it. But what you just described is basically confirmation bias, isn't it? If it confirms my bias, that's for me. If it doesn't confirm, I always say, if we find a paper that we like, we just like, we read the abstract and we say, that's amazing. If we don't like it, we're checking the statistics. We're looking at the inclusion criteria. We're going over every nook and cranny of it. We become statistical geniuses, right? And that is just a manifestation of confirmation bias. And that's a thing that I think we need to avoid. You need to listen to shit that is not your bias, but you also need to realize sometimes if it isn't your bias, is it still good information? And I think that's where a lot of stuff doesn't pass the test. Is it doesn't fit my bias, but at the same point, I know that it's probably not good information. I can step away from that just because I think my critical thinking skills are good enough to do that.
Well, and I think there's also a level of who's really selling something that has become product, like a product, like you know, like this is one of the things I always just try to go back to. Like the Squat University guy, Aaron, probably a super nice guy. Like probably, you know, and in a lot of ways, like he has people move, he talks about stuff, but it's a lot of the things he says are not like what we would consider to be evidence-based, right? Well, at some level, he's selling the product of like Squat U, and I guess, you know, I'm kind of selling my product too, but it's just It's one of the m number one things about like marketing and communication in general is that like simplicity is easier to communicate than
Of course.
complexity, right? So
Yeah.
when you're wading into the waters of nuance with maybe potential people who might want to work with you, like they're like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Like biopsychosocial or, you know, stress, recover, adapt. Like, what the hell is, I just want to make my butt bigger, right? Or I just want to,
Exactly.
you know, and
Yes.
so that's the tricky part is like, you know, even though, and the way I look at this too is like, business has been awesome for me. A lot of clinicians don't want to think about business, but like, business has been awesome. It's allowed me to like practice the way I want, help people in ways that I feel are advantageous, but it also requires me to tell people that I'm in business all the time, right? And that's kind of scary. And so I want to talk about just like getting into the education field. I'm sure you still treat people, and I'm sure you do that, but like, educating people. How, what drove you in that direction? Do you get a, like, I think teaching's fun. I'm sure you do too, otherwise you probably wouldn't do it. But like, what have you learned from teaching people?
So I mean, why, let's go into why did why. So I think for me, teaching, I'm going to sound a bit arrogant here. I'm going to come across as a little arrogant, and I'm not going to be apologetic for it.
That's fine. I don't think you should be.
I think one of my skills in life is communicating with people. So I feel that one of my, how that relates to other people, I don't know. But one of the things that I think I do quite well is take some complex stuff and make it sound quite simple. And maybe that's because I don't understand it very well. Maybe it's because I'm a very common type of guy. I'm not a, academic type, etc. And I think that's always lent itself well to educating people. Because what I'm trying to do is take your average physio, chiro, osteo, whatever, and help them understand certain key things better, whether that's the biopsychosocial model, evidence-based stuff, whatever. And and what I've learned, and maybe that wouldn't work in a university, or it wouldn't work with a PhD students, right? But it works with your average person who wants to learn a bit more. So I think what education has taught me is, that you have to kind of make what I think the real skill of education is being able to make people feel like you're educating them. You're not just talking at them. And I think that was something that I probably developed clinically, or maybe it's something that I've always had, is that, I make a point of trying to communicate and connect with everyone in the room and make them feel like, I'm interested in them. I want to help them learn. And I think what I've learned from education is probably the same skills in lots of different environments probably help.
What, like, what are the things that you see resonate with people that maybe get, so I just always think back to physio school, and there was like times when it was like we're just being like talked at and there was times when it was like we're being brought into the discussion. But like, what are the things that you think actually help people learn and digest and make some of the stuff, because that's ultimately the goal. And this is one of my biggest things is there's so much information out there and there's very little action on most of it. Like, you know, how do we actually apply this stuff?
So look, I think mostly people want to be able to relate to you. So I think that there are so many teachers out there who want you to feel like they are smart. So my aim of teaching you is to show you how smart I am, that you put me on this pedestal of being a teacher. Whereas for me, I think, if I know 10% and I can teach you 9% of that, I'm a great teacher. If I know 100%, but I can only teach you 1% of it, I'm probably not a very good teacher. But I think, I like to tell jokes. I like to take myself not too seriously. I try to avoid conflict in the classroom. I try to let people have their say. I tell maybe jokes that are quite close to the mark occasionally. And people probably think, I can relate to this guy. He's another human being. He's just passing along information. I'm not trying to make it too complicated. A lot of the time I'll try to make practical applications of some of these more complex stuff. But coming back to those key principles of just, you are a human, you're working with another human, do humanship. And a lot of the time, whatever way you work, whether you're a car salesman, a doctor, whatever, it all comes back to the same stuff. Making people feel like they trust you, make people respect you, make people have an element of, inspiration in your information, and then also, try not to be that guy that no one wants to speak to. And there's a lot of those people out there that are super smart, but maybe just lack some of those more fundamental human bits that would really tip them into greatness.
Do you think those things can be learned?
Well, it's like everything. Everything can be learned a little bit. Do we all start in the same place? And that's why your background as a person, where you grew up, your education, all of these things really matter for your development. And if you have had a very bland life where you don't have much interaction with different people and, it's all very small, and is it going to be hard to relate to someone who has had a very different life to you? So I think a little bit of life experience is really important. I think we can always be aware of the things that we could upskill in. But can you always teach everything? Of course not. Could you teach me to do the, theoretical physics? Probably not.
I think that's a really good point. I think like there you can like there's a lot of factors that go into someone learning something. And I mean, I think the best thing that ever happened for me as to like enjoy being a physio was that I spent 3 years being a nursing attech in a hospital before I went to PT school. Literally wiping butts and carrying out bedpans, and I loved it. The first few nights on night shift, I didn't like it because I was like, "What the hell am I doing here?" Cleaning up poop and whatnot. But I really learned to just love people, and like, and I learned to interact with all sorts of people too. And I think it was like, "Damn, okay," my dad had the wisdom to be like, because I was like, I thought I wanted to go to medical school. My dad's like, hey, like go work in a hospital, like be in that environment. I know it's not medicine, but it's medicine. And I spent enough time getting reps there and just learning to talk to people and interact with nurses and doctors, right? So it was cool. It was good. But I don't, that's one of the things I'm always skeptical with is like, hey, you just got out and you just have a kines degree, like, and you want to go be a physio. I'm like, that's great, but like your interpersonal communication skills, the soft skills are not really the soft skills. Like those are huge, right? So figure out how to hone those things, right?
I think sometimes as well is the mistake to think working with musculoskeletal problems is like being a doctor. Doctors make life and death decisions,
Yeah, that's
right?
true.
They are in there deciding whether you're going to die, or if you've got a life-changing disease, or these type of things. And I actually think most when we're dealing with people in pain and in injury, I think it's more a people focused thing
Yeah.
than it sometimes is a medicine
Medicine.
focused thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the mistake that people make, is that they want to be doctors. We're making these decisions and, getting this kind of information together, that this objective stuff, you've got this, you've got that, and actually most of it is talking to people, supporting people, and these type of things, isn't it? And that's kind of, you are dealing with people in pain.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, pain is not the same as disease. It often doesn't have objective signs. It doesn't have,
Yeah.
medication that we can give you. The
Yeah.
only way I can get information from my patient is to talk to them and communicate with them. How much of what we do is mostly subjective? Like, I
Yeah.
would say like 99.999%. Even the
Yeah.
shit we think is objective is reasonably subjective.
Yeah.
It's not truly objective. And I think that that's what people need to realize, that the communication and interaction part of it is the majority of that job.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant point, and I think that's almost probably the If you're gonna go to the root cause of a lot of the shit that the shitty narratives is that people are like, I'm a doctor or I know this is like XYZ, where it's like, yeah, if someone has leukemia, we can do some tests and like be like,
Exactly.
yes, you have leukemia. If somebody
Yeah.
has low back pain, it's like, well, is it their anterior pelvic tilt or is it just that shit they bend over for 6 hours a day at their job and they also hate their job? And they're going through some shit at home, and they don't get very much exercise because of all the demands of their life and XYZ, right?
And they've got comorbidities
Yeah.
and they've got, you know, the whole smorgasbord of stuff that goes into it.
Yeah.
And it's that element of sometimes it's that mindset of, you know, it's the same as pain is the same as disease. It's not,
Yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
pain isn't even the same as non-communicable disease, you know, high blood pressure, high cholesterol.
Yeah.
There
Yeah.
is no objective measure of pain. There is no way to find it independently of this person. The only conduit to this is in my is in our ability to communicate with each other.
Yeah.
And that is the challenge. But for some people, they didn't get into it for that. They've got into it for the, this is the problem, this is the solution, roll in the next person.
Yeah. Gosh, that's beautiful because it's like it's just yeah, I mean we talk about pain as an experience and you get somebody who's got, man, I rolled my ankle really bad playing basketball last week and like I'm like, this is an experience I don't want to have again. But like, you know, it's you talk to somebody like I get it. Like I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going through some phases of healing, you know, swelling's up, range of motion's down, it hurts, shit, you know, walking sucks, but like I can accept that it sucks and that I'm gonna get through it. Whereas somebody who just doesn't know is like, well, this, like, you're like, there, this experience, like, what do you mean this is an experience? Like, this is freaking pain, right? And that's one of those things where you keep, I've kept having these existential and philosophical, like, questions that have taken me there, right? Because, and I also, I'm gonna be honest too, like, in 2020, I mean, it makes sense. I was really, really low, because of just my narrative about the world and COVID and like all these factors. And I was depressed. And I think there was an element of because I am a physio, like I was like in physical pain and like I had weird pain in my fingertips and I had all sorts of stuff going on. And I was depressed as shit. Like I was very low, right? And I also was trying to fix it, right? I was like trying to figure it out all the time, not just like living, right? And that's a recipe for anxiety. And I had to go through it to be like the best thing for me was to just like learn to tweak some of these variables that like even the gym wasn't gonna solve, right? You know, and I love the gym. I love and I you know, even just like quote unquote like breathing wasn't going to solve. Meditation wasn't going to solve it. It was like, yeah, man, you're not living in alignment with your values to some extent. And that's a hard conversation to have with people, right?
But this, I'm reading a book at the moment on overdiagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't remember the author, but it's new, it's brand new, it's just come out. I stole it off some other dude that I saw on the internet, I think.
Yeah, that's good.
That's how I get most of my things. But, you know, the point is, in life, do we get low? Do we get depressed? Does life throw a lot of shit at us? And because of that, what we try to do is pathologize
Yeah.
normal emotions. You know,
Yeah.
if your life is going badly, if your partner gets a disease, if you lose your job, why would you not be low, depressed? You know, and sometimes we pathologize that and we look at it independent to life.
Yeah.
And that's the point. There's the Johann Hari book that
Yeah.
talks about depression and anxiety and the fact that it may not be chemical. It might be a reflection of you're socially isolated. It's a
Yeah.
reflection of, you know, the fact that you think you feel pretty shittily about life, that
Yeah.
your partner left you.
Yeah.
And I think that we, you know, I think again, a lot of this comes back to that over medicalization aspect where we've taken the human experience and we want to solve it and we want to find the reason for it and we want to explain it. And actually, sometimes we have pain. Sometimes our mental health suffers, and we need a cuddle, and we need some support, and we need kind words and a beer, and whatever else you like, You don't always need medical intervention. And I think that's really important, is that, you know, we forget some, and this was the point of the biopsychosocial model, is that we are becoming less human. You know, we are not just saying that, you know, we're not recognizing the humanity in these problems and the human in the problem as well.
Beautifully said. Was it is the book is it the date the Age of Diagnosis
I
from
think it is it's yellow. It's got a yellow cover.
I think it is. Does it have like a wristband on it with like the name of the author maybe? I
I
don't know.
think so. I think so.
There's a
Yes.
few of
I've
those
got it.
books like overdiagnosed.
The reason I can't tell you is because it's on my Kindle.
Oh
So
yeah, I
I
know.
can't
That's
physically see it in front of
yeah, you're
me.
good. Yeah. I mean,
But
and
I think
that's the
that's
hard
it.
part. That's the age of social media is
Yeah.
and it's like we're all trying to reconcile how we feel. And like here's the thing. Sometimes you just feel shitty and you just have to move through that. Like and I love to use the analogy of like athletes. Like if an athlete's having a bad game, you know, what do? You just let them you either keep letting them play or you pull them out and you say, "Hey, let's take the rest of the time off and just chill out. Gonna be okay." Like shooters gotta shoot. You gotta shoot shots. Like, you know, you'll come back to your mean, right? And I think so much of it for me, I think that average that regression to the mean is such a powerful tool. But what you're trying to do is actually level up your mean over time, like your average, right? And well, how do you do that? Well, it probably matters what you care about, right? Like, what do you care about? Like, if you say, I want to be a good dad and I want to play soccer on the weekends and I want to make sure that I'm just in good shape. Like, I don't care about having a six pack. I just want to be able to do life. Okay. Well, then let's start moving in those directions, right? Which that doesn't, you can't always have that. I mean, I would like to think you can have that conversation in like a physio clinic, but it sometimes doesn't feel like you can't, right? Because you kind of have to be the fixer, or some people get it in their brain, but I love the, you know, because regression to the mean, yes, things will come back to baseline. You talk a lot about, you know, natural history and that type of stuff, and I think that's important. But I do think there is, we have the power to level ourselves up, quote unquote. But it's based on what you want to do, what Ben wants to do, not what I say you should do, type of thing all the time. Does that make sense?
No, well, that's the point. And I think that so much of, you know, I'll use physical therapy as in air quotes because it encompasses a lot of, you know, different aspects. But I think a lot of it is about fitting, you know, people into what they should be rather than helping people be what they want to be. You know, and that's the point, isn't it? Is so much of what we do is based around our own biases, isn't it? Yeah, you know, and I think we should all admit that. You know, I know that Adam loves to do his resistance training, and you know, that's one of his big biases. And I don't like to do resistance training because it makes me feel sore, and so that's not one of my big biases, right? And so much of what we do and how we practice is through our lens of what we do, what we value. And actually sometimes it is about going back to it and saying, you know, what do you value? What do you want to get back to doing? Because, you know, some people might just want it to do something quite simple, you know. So there's always that great question. If you had no pain tomorrow, what would you go and do first? You know, and I've asked that so many times for people, and they're, you know, and it's so interesting what you get back. You know, it's like, why have you come to see me? And someone will say, well, I want to dance at my sister's wedding, and I don't want my hip to hurt. In fact, as long as my hip doesn't hurt that night, I don't actually care if my hip ever it hurts again all the time. Yeah.
That's a beautiful question. I'm gonna definitely steal that because I definitely ask like the you know what why are we talking type of thing. But like if you had
Yeah.
no pain tomorrow, that's a huge one. Last question or last little bit of question here. Like, what do you enjoy for like what does Ben Cormack do
Ah.
for exercise and you know what would you tell somebody who wants like because let's be honest, the big problems are like time. Knowing what to do, feeling like you can maybe achieve something, and you know, I'm probably missing some things, but like those are the things that get people started, right? Is like, oh, do I have some time? What should I do? And why am I doing this? But like, what do you like to do and why?
So I do a few different things, but I like to play sport. So
Yeah.
I went to the so I on Sunday I played tennis.
Yeah.
So like a social tennis thing,
Yeah.
with lots of different, you swap partners and you play. Monday
Yeah.
I went to boxing. So I boxed since I was about 10. So, you know, 30, longer than you've been alive. Then Tuesday I went and did some weights because I feel like I have to, because otherwise the internet will get upset. And then this morning I went and did a tennis lesson.
Yeah.
So I
Nice.
like to, so the things that I enjoy are playing sport and getting better at sport,
Yeah.
right? So they're the things that engage me. So playing tennis is, you probably uses every system going. It's
Yeah.
explosive, it's athletic, it's
Yeah.
dynamic, you know, it's cardiovascular, it's power, all of it. But I don't think about that. I don't give a shit about any of that. I just
Yeah.
enjoy playing it. And
Yeah.
also, I'm a competitive mother, right?
Yeah.
So I
We've
enjoy.
already earned the explicit title, so you might as well just go
Yeah,
with it.
fuck it.
Yeah.
So look, for me, I enjoy competing. I enjoy playing
Yeah.
sport, that whether that's boxing or whether it's tennis. I cannot stand running. I've decided it's not for me. I've been trying for 45 years, 46 years to enjoy it. It's not happening. I don't like the way it makes me feel.
Yeah.
But that's, you know what has always helped me support patients on their journey? It's because my biases don't generally work for patients. So
Yeah.
I haven't got a weightlifting bias. So I can't just say, well, go and go to the gym.
Yeah.
I'm
Yeah.
like, me, I can't say, well, let's fight it out, right? So
Yeah.
for me, that's always helped me explore other people's biases because not many
Yeah.
people have my biases. But for
Yeah.
me, it's about sport, it's about engaging, it's about social. It's about winning. It's not the process that really involves, you know, exercise. I don't want to be the best at exercising.
I yeah. Also, there's I've been thinking a lot about just so it's, those are really good points. And honestly, tennis. I started doing. I took tennis lessons last spring, and then they have cardio tennis, which is just a bunch of short side or just a bunch of game fast side. It's so fun. And I tried to like before my son. I have a 6-month-old, and I was going to that once or twice a week, and it's awesome because it's. I love to lift weights. Am I ever gonna be maybe super impressive? No, but I love to lift weights. I enjoy it. It's, you know, I think there is an element of just like I like to get better at stuff, right? And I also have a freaking garage gym, so it's like there's no barrier for me, right? Whereas a lot of people, it's like, yeah, it's intimidating, it's loud, XYZ. But the fact that, like, yeah, we need to move. Like humans are meant to move, and it's the illusory superiority complex, where it's like I'm better because I do something, like, which is really what so much of humans are, is like, yeah, I'm better because I'm a little bit stronger than you. It's like, well, yeah, that's no, like, and. That's one of those big things that I think holds people back, or it either makes people weirdly neurotic and egotistical. It's like, oh, just because I squat 500, I'm better than other people. And it's like, that's not the point of any of this. The point is just like, make yourself better, right? Have fun, make yourself better. Now, if you enter a powerlifting meet, then you get to say, I am competing and I am better, and that's fine. But like, you know, or winning a tennis match. But also, part of tennis is like, if you play against somebody that never gets better, it's no fun for you, right? So, like, part of this is like helping other people get better so that you can get better too, right? And that's the cool thing I think
But
about.
that's the internal drive. You
Yeah.
know, I would like to think I'm a much better tennis player than I was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's because it means something to me and I've
Yeah.
worked on it.
Yeah.
And we need to, everyone needs their tennis, they need their weightlifting,
Yeah.
whatever their, you know, whatever floats their boat. And for
Yeah.
some people, nothing might float their boat. And then you've got to have the hard question of, unfortunately, you do have to do something because
Yeah.
then otherwise you do put yourself at risk of all this different stuff. And as you are in my clinic, I do get to talk to you about
Yeah,
it.
that's kind of like the powerlifting meet type of thing. But you came here, like, let me help you a little bit, right? So, yeah.
Exactly. So, but I think
Yeah.
the really important thing for us is, you know, I'm just a great believer, and this is why so much public health information fails. Because people don't always want to do two cardio sessions and three weight sessions. You know, that's the problem. And it doesn't resonate with everyone in a way that it should. So we need a very very flexible approach to public health.
No, I love that. That's a good place, a good place to end this. I appreciate your time. Where can folks find you?
I'm very difficult to find, Dave. It's very, yeah, no, I'm all over the internet. I am the internet. So you can find me on IG, on the gram as Core Kinetic, on Twitter as Core Kinetic, even Facebook as Core. Is that still a thing? Do people, I don't know if people still
People
use
still go
it.
to Facebook. Your aunts and uncles are still on Facebook.
Exactly. Well, I am your aunts and uncles, remember.
You're not that much older than me, but yeah. You're old enough to be my uncle, probably.
that's exactly my point. There you go. I'm not quite as old as Adam. I do like to remind him of that. But yes, just basically on the net. I think if you type in Ben Cormack, you'll probably find a bunch of stuff. And I'm not shy about giving out my opinion.
I appreciate that. I think it's good to do. I think honest opinions are good, especially ones that don't scare the shit out of people. So, really quick, because you're from across the pond, and I'm a football fan. Do you have a team?
Oh, I have a team. Yes.
Who is it?
Well, you may not know who my team are. I'm going to test your knowledge of football here.
You probably give
My
me a
team
hint.
is a team called Millwall.
Millwall. Are
Yeah. So
they
we
in the second tier? Are they in
Championship.
the championship? I think I know of them. I
Yes.
love the relegation system is the greatest thing in sports. Like I wish we had that in like so many different areas. I just picked Everton when I was like 14 years old
Okay.
because I just liked I don't know if Wayne Rooney was still playing for them at that time, but anyway, I
He was
don't
only there for he
he
was
was
there
like
for a little bit when he was 16, right? And he scored the goal against Arsenal.
He
That
was well, he
amazing
was there when
goal.
he was young, and then I think he
Yeah.
came back around, right?
Oh,
For
he did come back just for a little bit at the end, I think, before he went off to the States. But yeah, so I support the team from where I'm from. So
That's
that's
see,
where I'm from in London.
that's
So
awesome.
that's what we do. Football team is a lot of the time about where you grow up.
It's super cool. I mean, I'm in Iowa. There's no American football team in Iowa. There's no good soccer team, so you just got to start picking teams, but
Oh,
it's cool stuff, so.
I think Adam was just out that way. I think he said he was in
He
Des Moines.
was. Yeah, I just one of my colleagues, one of my buddies actually just went and did his course and I don't know where the heck I was at. I don't know, like I didn't see it. If I would have known he was going to be in Des Moines, I probably would have made it happen, but
Well, I was in Michigan 2 weeks ago at the university,
that's
doing
awesome.
some teaching. No, we've been out in both of us have been out that way trying to spread the gospel.
Yeah,
But
exactly. The gospel, I mean, that's Greg Lehman's is the gospel of movement optimism, but you guys are very much in the same boat of the no bullshit gospel, right? I appreciate
we're trying.
Do you really quick last question, the travel aspect of it. Is that something that you envisioned? Is just become fun, or is it like, are
Oh.
you a homebody, or what do you think?
Oh, look, habit is really good for health. So, controlling your eating, your exercise. I feel much better when I'm in a really good habit, which generally is when I'm not traveling. But check this out for a travel schedule. I went to Las Vegas, then to Lithuania, then to Michigan, then to Belgium in 4 weeks. So I went from 8 hours behind to 10 hours in front to 7 hours back to 1 hour ahead. So I think I actually shortened my life by at least a couple of years.
Traveling that way is really hard on people, and I don't think a lot of people who have to travel, well, I think they do, they know it and they feel it, but it's also like, it is what life is, but it's hard, so I feel
And
you.
if you've ever taught a course, try teaching it on 8 hours jet lag, and that we'll sort the men from
There you go.
the
All right, Ben, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. I'll tag you in this stuff and just yeah, thanks so
Excellent.
much for coming on, and I appreciate
Good.
your
Yeah,
takes.
my pleasure. Thank you.
Have a great day. Peace.